handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
To another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 8:20 a.m. Eastern on December 1st in the year of our Lord 2020. Giving Tuesday, folks, and I don't mean to brag, but I've been making it rain on these charitable hoes all night and all day. I get into these because I've had an excellent year, and a lot of people have not. Let me put it this way. I've had an excellent financial year. The year has sucked. But financially, it's been a bizarrely excellent year. Like I'm a low level attorney at my firm, the lowest level of attorney at my firm. But I feel like this year I could walk around and be like talking to some of the associates, like, oh, you only made that? Sorry. but the Catholic guilt and just the desire to do something good, I said, okay, you know what, I give a few hundred bucks a month to the World Food Program, which I've promoted on this show several times. If I were to ever partner with a charity, you know, if they're ever looking for a ninth tier celebrity to do some promotional work, I'm your guy, World Food Program. But as I've said on this podcast before, when I saw the 60 Minutes segment, and I think it was 2017 on the World Food Program, I was blown away. They were going into the most dangerous, saddest places on Earth, and it's a phrase that's overused or maybe made to be corny, but I really looked at them doing literally the Lord's work. Like they were risking life, to do the most noble of work. And it's the same way, and we'll get to astronauts later in this episode, but I've always said, people always suggest that I'm jealous of you know who, but I'm not. If I'm better than somebody, I'm not jealous of them. I may be perplexed at some things, but the things that make me, I don't even know if jealous is the right word, but leave me in awe, which is a good thing, not a bad thing. It's not really jealousy, but astronauts, because I hate flying, and I'm like, you go into space? I don't even want to go on a cross-country flight, and you're like, take me to the moon, please. or like Mark Kelly, it's like the new senator from Arizona. It's like, yes, I would love to hang out in a space station for a year. That might have been his twin brother, but you know, they're both astronauts. That's why I've been like, as I get older, I just turn, you know, rest in peace. But I feel like in some ways I'm turning into my uncle, where it's like he was always obsessed with flight and astronauts and stuff like that. And he was of that age where he would have been, you know, in his teens when the space program, like when Alan Shepard, you know, was the first American in space. He would have been a teenager. He would have been in his, late 20s, mid 20. He was 20 when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. So it's like, it's understandable why he would be obsessed with that stuff. But as I've gotten older, I just, whether it's me becoming more fearful as an adult or something, I was a very reckless, fearless kid. And then I grew up and it just sort of, I blame the child psychologists who really took the aggression out of me. And yes, for those of you that listen to this podcast saying, wait, this is you not being aggressive. Yes. Now I am just aggressive with words. But now when I saw First Man a few years ago, my controversial number one movie of, I think it was 2018, it was amazing seeing what they really did to go to the moon. Like, they looked like they were in a fucking Winnebago floating across space. That is, and I've always said, it's like, courage is overcoming fear. For instance, if I were to go to the moon, I'd never stop pissing myself, and I'd probably never I'd never stop feeling, you know, alive if I ever got back to Earth. But I feel like, and the book, The Right Stuff, Tom Wolfe discusses, it's almost like the astronauts and these test pilots, they didn't have fear. Do you know what I mean? It's like, fear is like, I'm afraid to do that, but I'm going to do that. A lot of these guys just seem to be like, I'm not afraid of that. I'm just excited to do something that nobody's ever done before. And that's a different, that's the quote unquote right stuff. Spoiler, that attitude, that makeup. And I'm in awe of it. But on the flip side, that's the cool daredevil sort of, wow, that's so cool. The flip side of that is what the people at the World Food Program do, which is like, yeah, you're taking a rickety plane sometimes into a war-torn country to deliver food and water and supplies. Like, there's no glory in that except the glory of God. But in all seriousness, not afraid of burning in hell. In all seriousness, that is kind of what it is. Whether you believe God is God, or whether you believe just God is some sort of metaphor for love and connection and giving and a spirit, it's incredible. It's legitimately incredible and incredibly brave and incredibly self-sacrificial. So that's why they are sort of the charity I try to give the most to. So I give them a few hundred bucks a month. And I upped it from I was doing that for the last couple of years. I upped it from 100 to 300 this year. I was like, well, I'm making more money, so let's try to put some of it to good use. But Giving Tuesday, I just made it rain on charities. I'm probably going to be flooded with mail now. They think that I'm some sort of fucking philanthropist. I put the rapist in philanthropist. Now, that is a joke I wanted to tweet. And unfortunately, philanthropist is not spelled with rapist at the end. It's spelled with ropist. But I may do... guys, thank you. You heard it here first. I am definitely posting a Trump Giving Tuesday video where he says that he puts the rapist in philanthropist. Come on, Buzz! So I encourage you to give. I gave, in honor of my uncle, I gave a hefty chunk to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I gave a nice chunk to the Adopt a Golden Knoxville organization that snubbed Cookie for their calendar cover. She's still in the calendar, and I ordered 8, like a pathetic, proud father of a dog, to distribute to family and friends. But I gave a lot to them, even though they snubbed her from the cover, just to show how merciful I am. Insert GIF. I say GIF. I know some people say GIF, but I'll never believe it's GIF. Insert GIF of Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator screaming, "Am I not merciful?" That's what I did on Twitter today. I gave to the Trenton, what's it called? Soup Kitchen, because the Newark Star-Ledger had recommended some local charities, and they made a good point. They said, while everybody's giving, including yourself, giving to large charities, those are all great, but don't forget, like, local people in need. So I gave a big chunk to the Community Food Bank of New Jersey and an equally big chunk to the Trenton Food Bank, Soup Kitchen. I gave a nice bit of money to the ALS Society, and that one was selfish. Unlike the leukemia, which is you know, in honor of my uncle, who passed away a couple of months ago. It feels very close, but it's already been 3 months. I mean, that's a short amount of time, but it still doesn't feel like 3 months still is a full season. So I gave a lot to, I gave the most to them, but I gave a nice chunk to the ALS Society because that's just something that's always scared me. And that's a selfish one. You know, it's like, if I ever get it, I hope they've got a fucking cure. But, you know, whatever. If my fear of that shit can help research for 6 hours, then so be it. And who else did I give to? I gave to the New York, you know, of course, then I get an email. I'm done with all my donations except to my church. I am tithing. I really am not tithing. That's fine. I have to admit, you know, guys like Mitt Romney, who I think tithe. Tithing sounds good. When you make like, when you make 70 grand and your church is like, you should give 5% to the church and 5% to other causes. You're like, all right, 3,500 ain't that. When you're making what I'm making this year and this year alone, and you know it's probably not going to be this way next year, you're like, tithing? Wow, that's a, if I tithe this year, I feel like, can it count if I buy my girlfriend a car? Can that be a tithe? but it's, yeah, it's, I still gave a shit ton of money. So it feels good. I guess, I don't know. It doesn't even feel good. I don't want to say, oh, and I gave a nice bonus chunk, on top of my monthly, to the World Food Program. So to me, it's not even one of those things where I go, oh, it feels good. It feels right. Do you know what I mean? It feels like, in a year when people have been getting fired, losing their jobs, suffering family loss and fear, all in addition to putting up with Trump and his abhorrent minions, I've had a great year financially. A year that, like, I don't know. It's like, in a year when the world is fucking falling apart for so many people, I made more than double the previous biggest year of salary I've ever had in my life. It's just it's a crazy fucking year. And it just feels like, yeah, I mean, how can you not give? It's, you know what I mean? It's just like, I would feel bad not giving. It's not even that. And maybe that's guilt. Maybe people are like, oh, you should do it. But don't tell, I'll do it for why I do it. I want to help people. I hope that, you know, doing fucking YouTube videos and cameos, in addition to, you know, my salary from my law firm and all the other payments I've gotten this year. Coffee break. How do you not give? I don't know. It's just, it's like, there's so much need in the world. So hopefully, I don't know if one of those charities I mentioned inspires you, or if you're in a position to give a little bit, give a little bit. So that's that. Okay. Big news this week, and by big news, I mean who gives a shit, because I am hemorrhaging Twitter followers, but at a steady pace. That's what's so fucked up. I'm losing 100 followers a day. I've lost 100 followers a day for like 16 straight days. Now, if those are bots, so be it. Great. If those are people who don't like my comedy anymore because they were never really comedy fans and they only like garbage internet trending bullshit, even better. I'd rather lose them before the bots. But what's creepy is that I've complained about this several times, and hopefully when they bring back verification in 2021, which there is an announcement on the Twitter website that they will be, that will help me in terms of, you know, just giving my account a little more solid standing in various ways, and it will allow me to upload longer videos so I don't have to, you know, always be doing links and shit like that. But it's frustrating because, as I've complained before, and it's becoming very frustrating because I'm seeing severe drops in engagement. And the sad thing is, it's like, I'm a comedian. And yes, I make the occasional serious post, but for some reason, my account clearly got flagged. I have seen videos of mine that in 30 minutes have like 11,000 views, and then 5 hours later, they're at 13,500. Like, in other words, a trigger in the algorithm like hits the brakes, and it's Twitter. There's no recourse for me. There's no helpline. What are they gonna have a helpline for their, you know, billion users? Come on. So you're just sort of stuck trying to figure out how to navigate this. And it's frustrating because I have a video going up tomorrow, if you're listening to this Tuesday, called Dave Chappelle's Noirnette. Now, that's a parody on Nanette. And some people discovered me 7 years ago. Some people discovered me before then. Most people discovered me this year. But for those that found me in 2013 when I did my Louis C.K. Tells the Classics video, coffee break. This was a very divisive video because people were stupid. Most people loved it. But when I say most, I mean a majority. Like, it was like 70% favorable, 30% you fucking loser, hater, how dare you. Which was my point. That a video making fun of a comedian, not his personal life, just his comedic style and his jokes and doing an impression, if that can get such a visceral reaction out of comedy fans who will be the first people to tell you, hey man, lighten up, stop being so PC, bro. When you come for their guy, they flip the fuck out, which kind of proves my point. And it was a little prescient in terms of everybody who's always saying not being PC, but they never want you to be un-PC when it comes to their heroes. And that was like sort of my point with the video. And every angry message calling me a hater, hoping I get AIDS, yes, that was a comment, are proving my point that comedians have to be able to laugh at other famous comedians. I'm not picking on some open micer, like just dragging them out into the street and curb stomping them. I'm talking about A-list celebrity comedians, which there are only a few. It's like, you know, you got your Seinfelds, your CKs, your Dave Chappelle's, your Chris Rock's. And the new one I'm doing is Dave Chappelle, who's been getting rave reviews for his unfunny spoken word shows. Now, I don't say that as a hater. I think Dave Chappelle is hysterical. I have paid multiple times to see Dave Chappelle perform. I own Chappelle's show, even though maybe that's not okay anymore because of his contract dispute. But his last couple specials have been very Nanette. And by special, you know, a half hour on YouTube about George Floyd. Hey, this isn't me. And this is, once again, this isn't me going, be funny, man. No, be who you want to be. You're Dave Chappelle. You've given us many laughs. Do your thing. Not every, you know, maybe this is you just riffing or discussing some things as somebody with a platform and with an audience. Fine. But I'm allowed to make fun of it. And the joke is that this is basically Nanette, but it's Dave Chappelle. So Noirnette, haha, get it, is, I'm putting up a short clip on Twitter and then hoping it goes, you know, but I know posting Dave Chappelle's Noirnette in the title and then they see me doing my impression of Dave Chappelle, people are like, what in the fuck is this? And I will definitely get haters for it. If past is prologue, the Louis C.K. video showed me, and I don't know, I don't have any makeup in this, I just have a cigarette prop that I use very well, but I'm really proud of this, and it makes me feel good to be able to at least do something different than just cell phones. So it's just like the MAGA Kings of Comedy video I did. I'm still limited in terms of what I can do because I'm not working with my usual editors and my cast of comedians who I always enjoyed working with. You know, like just like the Black Eyed Tips and the Pete Dominic show, there were certain things that kept me going in comedy, giving me a little hope, giving me a creative juices. And Rod and Karen and Pete, they gave me the audience on social media to keep plugging away. But my crew of, you know, misfit stand-up comedians and actors in New York who would do my sketches on a monthly or every other month basis gave me a creative outlet, and it taught me writing sketches for several years. Really, it was a lesson that I didn't expect. I want to be the guy. I don't think that's a shock. I want to be the man. I want to be on stage. I want to be in the theater. I want to be on the poster with special event plastered across my forehead. Like, that's what I want. That's what I think I'm ready for. But it was once I remember Danny Ruye, who is now a radio personality in Washington, D.C., but he was, we started comedy in D.C. together many, many years ago. He was a high school classmate of a college teammate of mine, so that was our sort of connection. And then he was in New York for a couple of years, and I remember I wrote some sketches, and he was in the first couple of sketches of mine. And he was funny, and it was fun seeing. And I've seen this with other people who've worked with me. A lot of different people. If you just scroll through my old YouTube sketches, or go through the, like the sketch comedy playlist on my YouTube channel, is probably the best way. It was a unique pleasure to see people making good choices and doing funny things with my writing. And that was something I didn't, you know, you're kind of like, oh, I want to be the guy. And then you see somebody do something cool or fun with your work, and you feel like, oh, wow, I wouldn't have done it that way. I'm glad I'm working with this person. I'm getting to see new life into what I wrote and created. So that was, you know, I thought I might have been one of those ego monsters who's like, I'm actually, and I've starred, obviously, in a lot of my stuff, usually when it's something that I have to do, whether it's an impression or something. But it was surprising to me to be like, oh, it's actually fun writing for other people and seeing your work through them. Like, I thought it would be something where I'd be like, well, I wish I was doing it, but it really didn't feel that way. So, coffee break. So, I look forward to getting back to doing these sketches, but Dave Chappelle's Noirnet. I think the impression is good. Some people have said on like a sample I put up there, like, the cadence is excellent, but it sounds nothing like him. And I'm like, well, then it sounds a little like him, I think. But, you know, it's just Dave Chappelle riffing on tragedies and depressing events and getting lots of claps from the audience and a lot of mm-hmm. And there's like three laughs in a 7-minute video. That's the full version, which I hope you'll watch on my YouTube channel tomorrow. But there will be, you know, the whole point of this wormhole is I'm promoting that. I'd love you to watch and share Noirnet on all platforms and email it to friends if you like it, because I need, you know, sort of a grassroots movement for this one, because I'm being, for whatever reason, this isn't like a paranoia thing, it might just be an algorithm thing, but I am definitely being suppressed on Twitter, which has, of course, been my rise to fame and fortune this year, has been Twitter, and I didn't do anything, as far as I can tell, that would cause me to, I don't know, there's no hate speech on my page, occasionally there's stupid quote-unquote fans who actually hate comedy, but other than that, I'm not sure what I did. So if you like it, I hope you're subscribed to my YouTube, and I hope the loyal, righteous prick following will tweet it or share it with friends. You know, if you don't have a big following, you know, sharing it with friends is always helpful, leaving a comment or a like. But I hope it goes well, and I know that, you know, Dave Chappelle's Noirnet is probably going to get some search algorithm help on YouTube. So look for that. It should be, I think it's excellent. And it just feels good to branch out. You know, it just feels good to branch out and get back to a little bit of what I did, which is like, oh yes, not just Trump. And I've tried to do that, but most people seem to only see the Trump. And then like, they go, hey, I didn't know you could do this. And I'm like, where have you been for 9 months? Oh, you've only seen 4 of my videos. Thank you, Twitter. So there's your social media complaint for the week. So, my recommendation, I saw, and by the way, if you're not listening, I'd appreciate it if you'd go listen to Making Podcast Great Again. We're putting out killer content. I don't do a Patreon for this show because I'm too busy to, like, I'd feel guilty just being like, here, give $5 if you think I'm cool. but I don't. I'm already doing bonus content, a lot of bonus content every month for Making Podcasts Great Again, etc. So I would say check out Making Podcasts Great Again. We put up a lot of good bonus content in November because we reached our first sort of fundraising goal. Fundraising, you know, just subscriber and dollar amount goal. So that was nice. But, you know, I reviewed Hillbilly Elegy and Fat Man as Trump, because we do a monthly movie review show as Trump for the Patreon of Making Podcasts Great Again. And a quick review, Hillbilly Elegy, is everybody saying it's like the worst movie of the year? It's not good, but I was actually expecting it to be worse than it was. It's like a C, I'd say a C, which is not good and not worth seeing, but I was expecting like an F or a D minus. So I was a little disappointed that it wasn't that bad. But it's, you know, it's white trashy. And as I said, as Trump, all this white trash and no one said the N word, fake movie. That was to summarize my review as Trump. That was what it was. And I think the kid actor is one of the worst kid performances I've ever seen, which is weird because it's a Ron Howard movie. You got Glenn Close, Amy Adams. The kid was like mugging the whole time. And no offense to him, he's a kid, but it was a terrible performance. And the guy who played him as an adult was not that great. And it just, I don't know, it was just a whatever movie with some stupidity. I always laugh when I see a mom hitting their kid and it's supposed to be like this dramatic, traumatic event. And I'm like, ha 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 ha, I remember that. It's the same thing I felt like with Marriage Story last year, which I loved, but I was not nearly as blown away by the let me put it to you this way. The arguments my parents had growing up made Marriage Story look like, I was turning into my Dave Chappelle, made it look like a comedy. When I watched Marriage Story, I thought, that's a funny movie. That movie was funny. And then I found out later, it was a fucking drama. So yeah, Hillbilly Elegy, C-. Then I watched Fat Man. And I know Mel Gibson, very controversial figure, has gone crazy, seems to be racist, seems to have issues with Jewish people and women. But now on to the bad things. But I thought as Trump, it would be funny. And I haven't gotten any movies on demand this year. Everything, there's so much content on the streaming platforms that I was like, oh, I don't need to order a movie. I'll just watch it on a streaming platform. And my foot fell asleep, folks, because I was leaning into my desk, leaning in. Women's empowerment. I was leaning into my desk and my foot fell asleep. It's always good when you're overweight and lethargic and start having circulation problems. I'm sure this will end well. coffee break. But I said, wouldn't reviewing Fat Man be kind of funny for the Trump podcast? And I think it was. Mel Gibson is one of those people. I'm one of those people who always has a hard time. Like, I can rationalize away people's racism. And this is a luxury or a skill that I think some people don't appreciate growing up biracial, that you develop, that you really have to rationalize away some things people say, that sometimes you have to, you are able to compartmentalize ignorance from racism. And it's sometimes a survival skill. Or in a social skill, and sometimes it's just a real thing. Sometimes it's not just a rationalization. Sometimes I feel like I do have a greater sensitivity to knowing when somebody is saying. For instance, in college, when a teammate's uncle commented on my ferocious dunk to end my career and said, "You dunked it like a black guy." Now, all my teammates were appalled because, I had one Indian teammate, one black teammate. And then everybody, pardon me if I'm forgetting anybody. No, I had one black teammate, one Indian teammate, and me. So that's 2.5 persons of color on my team senior year. And most of them were like, and in my head I was like, yeah, it's a goofy fucking thing to say. And yes, it's simplistic, but really is what he's saying like heinous? No. He thinks I'm white, and believe me, it was fucking March in the Berkshires. I hadn't seen sunlight since the summer. And it's one of those things where I go, yeah, it's goofy, but I'm not gonna be on stage going, and then at the highest moment of my career, a white working class man who probably voted for Trump said that I dunked it like a black man. Like, I'm not, because you're like, yeah, that's fine. It's like whack that he said it, but it's also not like, oh, you piece of shit. It's like, oh, I know what the fuck he means. And yeah, it's like, it's lame and it's okay. It's fine. It's not, I don't even know the word. It's like, yes, did I have a moment of like, to break it to you, but. It must have been my half blackness that dunked it. But I could see my teammates were much more, and in a good way, they were much more like, God, that sucked. Sorry you had to hear that. And I appreciated that, but I was not like deeply offended. I was like, God, there's, trust me, I've heard way worse shit. And by the way, you know, my black teammate is like in the room. So do you think this guy would have said it if he meant like to fucking be like, you know, if what he meant was, you know, you dunk it like one of them niggers. Like, yeah, that would have been he obviously wouldn't have said anything, I think. But so the point is, I don't know what the point is. I just had a brain fart. But what were we fucking talking about? Oh, Hillbilly, right? And Fat Man. Yes. Okay, so Mel Gibson, guys. Mel Gibson. So I say, okay, Mel Gibson in this like dark action comedy as Santa Claus. And I said, this could be funny as Trump. Well, let me tell you something, folks. I watched Fat Man, and by the way, he has a black wife. And the joke as Trump was, what great acting. He has a black wife and kisses her and doesn't say the N-word. And I know that had to be tough for Mel Gibson. Right, but my point was, I do sometimes tend to rationalize things where maybe it's not appropriate. But I'm like, well, come on. Mel Gibson was like best buds with Danny Glover for years in the movies. And who knows if they liked each other or not, but they worked together for several movies. And Danny Glover is like hardcore activist. So I always wanted to have a Danny Glover impression. Like it's, I feel like I could have one and then I can't. And it annoys me because I feel like I could have a Danny Glover impression and I don't, I feel like I could, but I can't. And that's frustrating. But Fat Man, I give it a B. And not one of the, like, I give it a B. And the critics are savaging it. And I think that's because it's Mel Gibson. And my whole thing is, if you're going to watch a movie, you don't watch the movie. I totally respect your you don't watch the movie. But if you're going to watch the movie or you're going to watch it for your publication, give it a fair shot. And I actually thought Fat Man was, it wasn't perfect. But it's Mel Gibson as Santa Claus and Walton Goggins as a hitman who's been hired by a piece of shit kid to assassinate Santa Claus. And I think there's some really funny stuff in the movie. And it's like, it's a clever premise, I thought. So I don't know. I would actually, I'm surprised they didn't send it to Netflix or Amazon Prime because it probably would have made, I mean, come on, regardless what you think of him. Mel Gibson is still a humongous star, and like he obviously would have had the number one. It's a Christmas themed movie. I think it would have been the number one movie on Netflix for like a week or two. But yeah, I was surprised. I just thought I'd watch it to laugh for Trump, but I ended up watching it and being like, pretty enjoyable. How about that? They're shaped like little footballs. That's a Ace Ventura line. If you don't know, now you know. N-words. So let's talk about The Right Stuff, folks. I watched The Right Stuff on Disney Plus, and I mentioned it last week that I was going to start it. And let me tell you something, that show scratched an itch, okay? I loved it. Loved it. I didn't know if I'd like it or not. I really liked the book. I really liked the movie. I loved the TV series. Now, some people are like, too much Mad Men drama, not enough space. I'm like, yeah, but it's about the first person to go to space. So how much space can you have in a series where the lead up is sending the first man, well, in this case, the first American, to space? Do you know what I mean? Like, how can there be a lot of space if we've never been, if the whole point of the series is to get to the, you know, it would be like watching a movie about Columbus coming to America and then going, not enough America. And it's like, well, the whole point was he was the first, I'm sorry, indigenous peoples, but you get what I'm saying. In other words, if the movie is about the journey to America, then like the movie ends with him getting to America instead of like hanging out in America. You can't be too mad at it. I loved it. I really loved The Right Stuff on Disney Plus. And let me tell you something, for longtime listeners of this show, we took a year hiatus when I thought I was going to completely quit comedy. And when I also had a new job and thought, in those 300 plus episodes, I've probably said some inflammatory things. Let's just end the show and delete all archives. But you know, there have been various man crushes throughout the life of the Righteous Prick podcast. For a good stretch, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was sort of holding the championship belt, and then Henry Cavill just with a strong chin just ripped it from the weak arms of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And then all of a sudden, you know, I started watching Henry Cavill movies, and I was like, I watched The Witcher. I couldn't make it through that. I thought that was terrible. He was not good as Superman, but he looked the part brilliantly. And I just, you know, as the opera singer says in Amadeus to Salieri, only talent interests a woman of taste. And that's how I felt about my man crush with Henry Cavill. I was like, sure, you're easy on the eyes. But yeah, I think we're done. I think you're not talented enough. I'm sorry. Well, there's a new man crush sheriff in town, and I don't even know the actor's name, but the guy who plays Alan Shepard, the first American in space, basically looks like a cut young, cut as in physically fit, not cut as in circumcised. a young, physically fit Russell Crowe. And he's a swaggering pimp in the right stuff. And I was watching this going, all right, 2020, there's JL's Righteous Prick man crush, whoever the fuck played Alan Shepard. Let me tell you something. This show is, I loved it. And I don't know. I'm telling you. And now I'm starting to sound like Day. Every time I say, I don't know what he did. But but I you know, my combination of like really admiring and being interested in space stuff and space stories. I watched the Challenger documentary, the 4-part series on Netflix. My next space thing will be Away with Hilary Swank, who was a low key JL fave. When she showed up, coffee break. When she showed up in that blue dress, looking like a buff Julia Roberts to the Oscars when she won for Million Dollar Baby. I was like, look at this. She had that look of like, in real life, she's hot. But for the Oscars, she looks like sturdy and normal, you know, like kind of like how I felt about Jennifer Garner, where it's like, she's all right. But then you realize when you look at Jennifer Garner and you're like, this woman's amazing looking. Just in Hollywood, she's just sort of like put together. But you're like, if Jennifer Garner walked by me in the street, I'd trip over my fucking lower lip. I'd be drooling on myself. But Hilary Swank was a little, you know, she's no, let's just get the rankings out there right now again for those that care. Number one all time JL is early 90s Demi Moore. That's the number one all time. Now, of course, does that have to do with probably mid adolescence, the emerging of the man that JL would become? Of course. But yeah, Demi Moore, A Few Good Men, Indecent Proposal, A Few Good Men, it's a wrap. There's nobody ever competing with that Demi Moore. Sorry. Number two is Mariah Carey. More of the mid-late 90s when she sort of lost a little bit of her voice, but what she lost in voice, she gained in breast implants. And she didn't really, I mean, she just couldn't hit like emotions, but she still had the voice. I don't know where Demi Lovato fits. You know, we'd have to narrow it down to 2015. Cool for the Summer, Demi Lovato. But I think Demi Lovato 2015 probably makes a top five. But she doesn't really get an era. She's just getting like a single year. Like she had a great season, you know. She finished third in the MVP voting that season, but never peaked again. I don't know. But incredible talent, and she looked phenomenal that year. But it was probably tough because I think she's naturally a little bit of a thicker girl, and I think she did that for like photo shoots and for, you know, the press. And I appreciate it, but it's, you know, as I can attest, it's hard to maintain. coffee break. But the right stuff, I loved it. Flat out. Flat A. I give it an A. I just enjoyed the shit out of it. I felt inspired. I felt like the score, even the score to the movie was like understated inspirational. Unlike the ending of The Trial of Chicago 7 with Sacha Baron Cohen as Abby Hoffman. That was too much. That was too much. And I don't know how this podcast sounds, but I'm using a new mic, but I'm holding it close to my face so that my foot... Well, I was leaning into my desk and my foot fell asleep, so now I'm holding it probably too close, and I hope it sounds okay. But this is a new mic. New year, new mic. But like, unlike the inspirational music at the end of the Chicago 7 movie, which was just like, oh my God, Aaron Sorkin, stop it. You're beating me over the head with be inspired, be inspired. But... yeah, I love the right stuff. And I'm 6 episodes into the new season of The Crown, so this week I should finish that. Love The Crown. I posted my Mount Rushmore of streaming programs. And people were like, not Queen's Gambit. I was like, I haven't watched Queen's Gambit, but like, if you're a 7-episode limited series, you don't get to join my Mount Rushmore. You know, just ask the creators of Lost if it's easy to make one good season of television. Okay, show me more Queen's Gambit. I'm sure Queen's Gambit is good, but like Crown, Narcos, that's 4 and 5 seasons respectively. The Boys, 2 seasons, both phenomenal. And The Right Stuff, which admittedly is only 1 season, but I just, I think they may have another season of it. But I just, you know me, I'm biased with this astronaut shit. So that was my Mount Rushmore. And it's recency bias. I think also, I've said this before and I said it on social media, possibly the single greatest performance on any streaming show is the Swedish Chef in Muppets Now. Legit laughs when he wants to fight Danny Trejo in the kitchen. That's pretty fucking funny. When he refuses to tip an Uber Eats delivery guy. Pretty funny. But yeah, there's my highlights from streaming. If you're at all interested in space, or if you liked Mad Men or whatever, God, I loved The Right Stuff. Loved it. And look for a lot of things in the future from whoever played Alan Shepard, because he is just full-on pimp in that show. And it's a good performance, but a movie star performer is what I would say. So... we got a new title, the JL Man Crush, new title, new belt holder, okay? And that belt is around my neck. No, I'm kidding, guys. So I guess, is that it? I every week around like Wednesday, I go, fuck, I forgot to talk about that. And now I'm sounding like Norman Bates from Bates Motel, mother. There's so much shit to watch on streaming, and I have only 1 vacation day left in the year, and because I've used so many vacation days just for like, I can't work today. I'm too stressed about comedy. I'm too angry about lip syncing. I'm too tired and have headaches because I can't sleep. So 1 vacation day, I got to make it till, I have the 25th off, which is a 3-day weekend. I want to see if I can make it till then to not use a day off. I just feel like when my vacation resets on January 1st, I just want to be like, I'm taking 2 weeks off immediately because I just can't do it. But the fact is, I would do that if I had a tour lined up for April through October, which is what I'm going to try and do. My December is basically, not, if you guys care, you guys are fans of mine, so here's inside the behind the curtain. December, I'm going to put the finishing touches on my new hour in terms of writing it. And I have some shows, some Zoom shows lined up where I'm going to start really working out the material. You know, not an entirely new hour for paying customers, but like, here's 20 minutes of material that I'm going to be doing. Here's another 15 minutes of material surrounded by older material and impressions. But the goal is to have the set done and ready to be worked out by the end of this month. And then in January, I'm going to pursue booking agents, email all the clubs I've ever worked, show them my social media numbers. They should know who I am. I think if you put a stand-up clip of me and that Trump Easter video on a website and list my credits, Howard Stern, Mark Maron, Late Late Show, I should be able to line up. I'm hoping, my goal is between April and October of next year, I want to line up 30 headlining gigs. That's maybe too ambitious. That's like, but I'd like to. And I think once I can do that, it's a wrap. It's a wrap for other employment, because I think once I get to showcase myself, it's on. And then the goal becomes to produce sometime in that span, definitely a new album, unless someone signs me for a special. So there will be a new album or a new special or both in 2021. Will I self-produce them? I would say probably. Will somebody else produce them? I hope, but I don't know. So December, we put the finishing touches on the hour that I'm working on. It's all, I mean, the material's all there. I just want to really, really sort of, you know, before I can, you know, I want to have it all written out and then make the tweaks to it as I perform it. But yeah, looking forward to that. And that's something to look forward to. But in the immediate future, Dave Chappelle, Noir Net. I hope you enjoy it. I'm proud of it. And I think it's sort of, I think it's the natural follow-up to Louis C.K.'s Tells the Classics from 2013. So, yeah, that's it. I love it when people are like, you look like Adam Sandler in this picture. And I'm like, I look like Adam Sandler in real life, so pictures of me should also look like Adam Sandler. I guess there's nothing else for me to share. Give to charity. And if you have anything extra, go buy my albums or join my Trump Pod Patreon. But I hope you have, I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. I don't know. I guess that's it, right, folks? There's nothing else really to discuss. Yeah, I always do this because I always feel like there's something I've forgotten, but I don't think there's anything I've forgotten. So have a great Tuesday. Have a great week. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Give to those in need if you are in a position to do so. Buy my albums if you're in a position to do so. And, you know, share Noir Net with friends, family, colleagues, etc. And hopefully it does well. I know there's going to be a lot of hate for it, but that's okay. That sort of proves my point time and time again that comedy fans are more protective. They're protective. The only thing that they're more protective of than the right of comedians to say things is their right to stop you from saying things about their favorite comedians. So, that's it, guys. I think we've done another Righteous Prick podcast. I appreciate you guys for listening, for laboring through these sometimes. But be sure you give it 5 stars on iTunes, whether you listen to it on iTunes or another platform. It'd just be nice to see those ratings go up. I think I had, at one point, I think I had 200 ratings on the old feed of the Righteous Prick podcast, and we're like at 122. So if you can't afford anything from me this month, you can afford to give me a free 5-star review on iTunes. So much appreciated, or Apple Podcasts, whatever they transitioned into. So like I said, you still have to use the iTunes bathroom at my establishment, Apple Podcasts. So have a great week. I've said that again. Give, donate, live, love, laugh. No, don't do that. I hate that phrase. So that's it, guys. Thanks for listening. Hopefully this sounded good on the new mic. If it didn't, I apologize. And I will see you next Tuesday.